There we go. Hello. Yes, it works. Wonderful. So one clock is saying 3 o'clock, the other one past three, so not quite sure, but close enough. So welcome to the ongoing meditation class. For people who haven't been to this center before, there is a class for beginners on my right, so on your left in that little room. If you are learning to meditate, because here we will be sitting for about 45 minutes together. There will be a little bit of a talk in the beginning to set things off, and then I'll do a guided meditation, but it won't be guidance through the whole meditation. So it's kind of like an intro to get you into the right mood, and then I'll just let you meditate in silence before we finish off together around 4 o'clock, and there will be opportunity for questions if you have any. And also, because this is live streamed, people from overseas who are watching this can also send some questions that can hopefully be answered. Great. So I wanted to start off with a chanting, or with a chant that I really enjoyed as a layperson and still enjoy today. I'm from Europe, I'm from Switzerland, so the first place to go for me, because the monastery in Switzerland wasn't a training monastery at that time, was Amaravati Monastery, with Ajahn Sumedho as the head at that time. And when I went there, they would often do this chant, also, for example, in the kitchen before we would start work. And it's the chant on universal well-being. And I really enjoyed it, so I wanted to kick off with that one and then explain a little bit about what it says and how this relates to meditation. May I abide in well-being, in freedom from affliction, in freedom from hostility, in freedom from ill will, in freedom from anxiety, and may I maintain well-being in myself. May everyone abide in well-being, in freedom from hostility, in freedom from ill will, in freedom from anxiety, and may they maintain well-being in themselves. May all beings be released from all suffering, and may they not be parted from the good fortune they have attained. When they act upon intention, all beings are the owners of their action and inherit its results. Their future is born from such action, companion to such action, and its results will be their home. All actions with intention, be they skillful or harmful, of such acts, they will be the heirs. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So for the people who know this formula, they might have recognized that this formula is talking about the four Brahma-viharas. And the translation of the four Brahma-viharas that I was using recently at the retreat that I was teaching at Jhana Grove was, it's the four highest hangouts for our minds. So it basically means when we have a happy, peaceful, and pure mind, those four mind states are naturally present in our mind. So that would be the natural mind state of an enlightened being, or of someone who is in a very, very pure, good mind state. But now, we don't just want to think about it that way. We also want to think about it as a pathway into those mind states. And that's what meditation is about. And those four Brahmaviharas can be really, really helpful to set the scene or to create those feelings in our minds that will help us to have peace, calm. So the four terms I used for those states in the retreat was the first one I called love. As Akima used to say, love is a very, very loaded term. But she still liked to use it. Sometimes we talk about loving kindness as a translation. I really like the word unconditional when it comes with it, because we're not talking about the love that attaches to things or that doesn't want things to change, or the kind of love that we get if we do the right thing. So when there is kind of control involved in the whole thing. We're talking about the love which is freely given. And in the Metta Sutta, the Buddha describes it as the love the mother has for its only child. And as mothers will know, and fathers as well, I'm not a parent, so I don't, but I can kind of imagine it. So children, I was a primary school teacher, so I remember when I was teaching, and they asked me if I had a girlfriend and if I had children, and I said no. But one of the kids turned around and said, but you have 17 kids, because I had 17 kids in my class. So for 1 year, I had 17 kids. Anyway, so if you have a child and that child misbehaves, you're still loving that child, even though you might not approve with the actions of what that child does. But there is still an unconditional love which is present. So that's what we're really talking about when we're talking about metta. And then the second one, which is called karuna, is often translated as compassion. I don't like the word that much, because when you go to the root of compassion, it actually means suffering with. And that's not what we're supposed to do. We are supposed to feel with someone. We're supposed to understand what's happening in another being and then being there for them. Akema used to say, if someone is suffering and you suffer with them, you have two people who are suffering. So you're not really solving the problem. So compassion is actually very, very similar to metta, as far as I understand it. It is a very deep unconditional kindness again, but it has a different trigger. So the trigger for compassion is when we see suffering in the world, or if we see suffering in ourselves and we want to try and alleviate that suffering, or we even just have a wish, may that person be safe and may that person not suffer, or may my body not hurt, may my mind not hurt. So care can be extended towards ourselves as well. And then the third one is called mudita, and it's often not talked about enough. Mudita is joy or rejoicing. So we are rejoicing along with someone or with something wholesome, with something nice we are seeing in the world. And I was also trying to explain that it is so important that we turn this around to ourselves as well. So to have self-care, but also to have self-joy, or I don't know if that's the right word, but anyway, to rejoice in the good qualities in our minds. And one thing that really struck me is something Dr. Brené Brown was saying. She was saying that we are often building walls around ourselves because we want to protect ourselves from things out there. And when we are doing that, we are not just protecting ourselves from the harmful things. We're also protecting ourselves or walling ourselves in and not being able to experience the joy which is there outside in the world or within our own minds. So I'll be talking about that a little bit more afterwards. And the last one of the Brahmaviharas is upekkha. It's called equanimity sometimes. I liked to call it balance. So it means to have an even mind, to have an even heart. It means to not get stuck to things, to not get too excited about things, or too involved in things, or estranged from things when they arise in our minds, to be connected with whatever is happening, but to have a safe distance so we don't get sucked into what is happening there. So for this meditation, I would like to focus on the third one, because I said before, it's often neglected. So how can we cultivate joy? For me, joy always comes like in a package, or there is kind of, there is a way how it is developed. And the words I like to use for it is first appreciation, then gratitude, and the third one is thankfulness. So you might think now that they actually mean all the same. Maybe they do to you, maybe they do to other people, but I think about those three words slightly differently. So the appreciation means that we recognize that there is joy. We recognize that there is something we can rejoice in. That's really the first step. So we give something which is nice, which is wholesome, we give it value. And that would allow us to kind of go there with the mind. That's the mindfulness part of meditation. So we appreciate if something wholesome does arise in our minds. And then we have gratitude for that. And the picture I often use is it's like a fountain. So you have something nice arising in your mind during your meditation, some relaxation, some joy. So that's the water. And then you have the first vessel, which is the appreciation that starts to fill. And then it starts to overflow at some stage. And when it starts to overflow, it overflows into gratitude, which is a bit more of an attitude that we have in our minds. And then that vessel starts to fill as well. And then once it starts to overflow, it starts to overflow into thankfulness, which basically just means expressing our appreciation, expressing that joy, that gratitude that we have in our hearts, and saying thank you. And that's what we will try to use in our meditation afterwards. Okay, so I hope I've given you a bit of framework for the people who need the framework. And then we'll be starting with our meditation now. So if you're not already sitting comfortably at the moment, please feel free to wiggle around a little bit. Find a position which is good to maintain for a little while. And then we can gently close our eyes if they're not already closed. That will help our minds to not be out there in the world, but to turn inwards. To come back, so to speak. That they're not scattered and lost in the world. And once the mind is returning, the first thing we'll often become aware of is the body. Let's see if we can treat this body of ours with appreciation with gratitude and with thankfulness. Let's shower our body with these beautiful qualities. Imagine you're in the shower, but now we're doing this in slow motion. So the water is the mindfulness and all those beautiful qualities. So imagine that this water of gratitude is hitting the top of your head. And then slowly washing down your body on the right and the left side of the head. Soaking it with appreciation. Being grateful and saying thank you to that part of the body. Feeling how it slowly goes down the sides of your head, the sides of your neck, on the right and on the left. And still it's until it starts reaching your shoulders. Try to feel how it is rolling over your shoulders. This warm, pleasant water of gratitude. From your shoulders down your arms. On both sides. Down to your elbows. Lower parts of your arms. All the way down to the hands. The backs of the hands, the palms. Right into all the fingers. And then just feel those areas that have been washed with this water of gratitude. And say thank you. And see what that does to your body. And let's now that water flow over the back of our head. Over our neck. The shoulders and the upper part of the back. The lower part of the back. All the way down to the hips. showering your body with kindness, with appreciation. With gratitude and feeling how it relaxes when we do that. Great. Let's do the front of the body now, so washing over our face. And relaxing all those muscles around the eyes, around the cheeks, the mouth, the jaw. Thanking them for all the hard work they do every day. But now they can take a break. Washing down the front part of your neck. And down the whole chest. Try to feel the movement of the water and stay with the movement of the water. Now spreading down to your belly. Again, all the way down to the hips. And then let's carry on down the legs, the front and the back. Washing them with this beautiful warm water of gratitude and saying thanks to these parts of the body. All the way down to the knees. Over the lower parts of the legs. All the way down to the feet. And into your toes. So let's appreciate this whole body of ours. Gratitude. That's kind of the outer layer of the body. But there is so much more happening inside of this body. So let's breathe in those beautiful qualities of appreciation, gratitude, and thankfulness. Spread it around in our head. Say thank you to our brain, which works so hard all the time. And then let's move down along the spine. And spread this beautiful gratitude within our body. Down the neck. Spreading it to our organs, such as the heart and the lungs, which is working all the time. And saying thank you to them. Down to our belly. And all the organs which are living there. Which are helping us to keep alive. Thank you, guys. Thank you for all the hard work you do. And then we do the same for our arms, but from the inside out, from the bones right to the skin. Filling our arms with gratefulness, with gratitude. All the way down to the hands. Then let's do the same for our hips, from the bone, from the inside out, all the way to the skin. And then the legs, all the way down to the feet, from the inside out. Fill them with gratitude. And feel the relaxation and the joy that arises from it. That way we've worked through the whole body. And hopefully it could relax and be at ease this way. If there is still some areas that feel uncomfortable, just go there with your mind and send it as much kindness as you can. So that it also may loosen and relax. And when the body is reasonably relaxed, we can let it fade into the background and just let it go. If it asks for our attention again, we now know what we can do. Let's now try to have the same attitude towards the mind, towards our mental things happening. Thoughts, emotions. Let's appreciate our mind. Bring up gratitude towards our minds. And thank them for the work they do. Then hopefully the same thing will happen like with the body before. If we view them in such a way, they'll relax. And fade. And what will remain is a silent joy. Let's delight in that. So whatever might arise in your meditation, even if your mind wanders, no worries, come back to this appreciation, gratitude and thankfulness. And if you can settle on the joy that arises and let it develop, that would be wonderful. Or if you wish, you can also invite the breath into your mind and stay with that for the rest of the meditation. enjoy the rest of the time we have together in this meditation. getting fairly close to the end of the meditation. So now is the time to reflect. And to see what has worked or what might not have worked this time. Just ask yourself how much more peaceful, calm and relaxed am I now compared to when I started meditating. And what have I done to grow these beautiful qualities in my mind and in my body? And whatever beautiful qualities we might have gained in our minds, let us now share those beautiful qualities with the people in this room and with the people outside there in the world. So instead of ringing the gong 3 times, I'll just chant that chant again, and if you wish, you can follow the words with your mind and spread those thoughts of the 4 Brahmaviharas out into the world to end this meditation. May I abide in well-being, in freedom from affliction, in freedom from hostility, in freedom from ill will, in freedom from anxiety, and may I maintain well-being in myself. May everyone abide in well-being, in freedom from hostility, in freedom from ill will, in freedom from anxiety, and may they maintain well-being in themselves. May all beings be released from all suffering, and may they not be parted from the good fortune they have attained. When they act upon intention, all beings are the owners of their action and inherit its result. Their future is born from such action, companion to such action, and its results will be their home. All actions with intention, be they skillful or harmful, of such acts, they will be the heirs. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Wonderful. How was that? Is there any questions? There is a microphone, I see, at the back there. So if you have a question, just raise your hand and the microphone will be brought to you. Otherwise, we also have maybe some questions from the internet, from the world out there. Did you feel what we were spreading out there? Okay. Aha. So we have 2 questions. One is from the USA. like this Venable sitting next to me here. And the other one is from Germany. So, first question from the USA. When unwholesome mind states arise during meditation, how do we deal with it without adding further aversion to the unwholesomeness? Yes. Well, there is different approaches to this. It really depends on at what level your mind is. So one of the ways that we can deal with this is by replacing the unwholesome things with wholesome things. So we are trying to not pay attention to those things that might be arising and shifting our attention to something which is more neutral or which is more wholesome. So that would be, for example, our body, as we were doing in this meditation. So we are shifting our awareness, and then we're trying to develop those beautiful mind states at that time. And then hopefully that will become so strong or strong enough that it will entertain our minds more than those negative thoughts. And we might realize, this is a much nicer energy than this kind of energy of ill will or aversion. And then we can stay with that object. But sometimes that doesn't work. Sometimes something arises and we get caught up in it and it doesn't quite work. So we have to try and use other tools, like trying to use wisdom to say, look, where is this leading me? Is this leading me to peace and stillness? What I'm trying to cultivate in this meditation here now? No, not really. So we try to drop it with a bit of wisdom. If that doesn't work, I often encourage people to try and feel that thought. So we are used to think a thought, and we're used to think that we are the thought. But it's actually just the thought. It's just a formation that comes up. So what does it mean to feel the thought? Try to feel what is happening in your body, connected to that thought. So what is the impact of that thought in your body? And then try to relax that, the tension, wherever you might find it in your body. And that will help to relax the tension which has arisen in the mind. Yeah, a few things that you might want to try and see what works for you. The second question is from Germany, and it says, how do we find peace and stillness in strong emotions like sadness, despair when they come up? Is there anything we can do but sit and be patient? Are feelings part of the mind? Yes, there are things that do arise in the mind. But emotion is always something that also has perception in it and a kind of judgment how we are perceiving these things. So sadness is one example here. It kind of ties into the other question. I was talking to someone at lunchtime who just lost their loved one, their partner, 2 weeks ago. And we were talking about sadness there. And I was trying to encourage her to kind of do the same thing there, to see the sadness for what it is, but to try to be with that sadness like you would be with a little child, trying to just comfort that child, not kind of trying to explain to that child why it shouldn't be sad or whatever, just being with that child, reassuring that child. That's one way. Or the other way, again, is to try and see that that sadness that comes with grief and loss, that sadness is connected to something very precious that we have lost. And that's kind of on the other side there. That's the gratitude part that is part of this sadness. And we're not used to see sadness as a mixture of different emotions, of different mind states. We just think sadness, bad. Instead of thinking, sadness has a reason and it's there because of something. And I try to encourage her to shift her attention from the sadness of there is this big hole in my life now, there is this huge change that I don't know what to do with, to the sadness is here because I really appreciate that time I had with my partner for so many years, and with the children, the two children that are left behind now as well. And to see if the tears or the sadness that is there can be transformed into tears and sadness of gratitude. I mean, it's not a sadness of gratitude, but tears of gratitude, to kind of shift that. Because we tend to have a fault-finding mind and to really get stuck in the negative emotions. So we're not trying to ignore them and not see them at all. We let them be there, but we also see the other parts that are there and encourage the positive emotions to get a better say, to make their volume a little bit louder, so to speak, so we can get a balanced view there. But a big part of meditation, for me at least it was in the beginning, is to sit with all those things and to have the right attitudes towards them. Ajahn Brahm often says that meditation is not about the object that we are watching. It's much more about the attitude that we have towards that object. And if that attitude is, for example, gratitude or love or contentment, then we are seeing that emotion through those eyes. And then the emotion, which is the object at that time, can start to relax, and the person who is looking at that object can relax as well. So it's important what the relationship is and what those ingredients are that we put between ourselves and whatever we are watching. Okay, I hope that was helpful. Anything from the floor that has come up? No? There is? Okay. Yes, please feel free if you need to go to go and do what you need to do. Yes, please, Kanchana.
Hello, Bhante. I was all really sad that I missed the first part of today's session, because obviously very, very, very good. Thank you so much. It's so beautiful.
Okay, it's all on YouTube, I hear.
Sorry,
all on YouTube, so you can rewatch it and replay.
I will. Definitely. Definitely.
Okay, very good.
But I'm just curious to get some feedback from you. I obviously have never heard you teaching before, so I'm just curious to see how you would answer this question. You, partway or towards the end of the guidance, you talked about developing joy.
Yes.
And then gave us the option of watching our breath, or being with our breath if we wanted
yes.
to.
Yes.
So I'm curious, in your own practice, if you tend to, how you tend to do that, especially taking into account the specific guidance that you gave and the focus on appreciation and gratitude and thankfulness. Mm.
So with the Brahma Viharas, we are trying to create wholesome mind states. And those wholesome mind states, they always come with a very delicate joy. And when we start to appreciate that joy, like Ajahn Brahm says, you become a connoisseur of those kind of joys, like you become a connoisseur of the connoisseur ice cream or something. And you really enjoy it and you really let it into your mind. So that can become an object that you can settle on, but it does shift at a certain stage. So I was talking about the object before and how we're watching that object. So we're working on that relationship in between. So we're working on, Ajahn Brahm calls that the glue, which sticks your mind to the object. So the joy can become the object itself. But at a certain point, when you've kind of developed that joy, it's like the lens your mind is looking through. And then when you're watching whatever you're watching, say you're watching the breath, it becomes a delightful breath because you're watching it with the right attitude. So you're kind of trying to cultivate that part of the equation. That's also why Ajahn talks about kindfulness. So it's mindfulness, but it's not just mindfulness. I have to watch my object or whatever. So that kindfulness part, that kindness part, whatever that is, however it can be developed in your mind. And I've tried to give you a few options in that guided meditation, how it can be cultivated. And then that becomes the glue, or that becomes the lens you're looking through. Does that answer your question?
Yes, so this is what I'm getting from the answer is that it's more of a long-term process, that the more you do this kind of thing, the more that becomes what you, how you relate to when your breath comes out.
Correct, yes.
I see. Thank you so much.
Because at a certain stage, we just start to invite the breath into the meditation. People often jump to the breath way too early. And so I've found that the Brahmaviharas are a very nice way of cultivating that joy. And when you do a metta meditation, for example, sometimes you're just reciting the mantra and wishing all those beings well, and at the same time kindling that happiness, that joy. And then it can be used in the other meditations as well, because very often it's lacking in the equation. Okay, I better let you go. Oh, okay. Anyway, I mean, I'm happy to stay for a bit longer. I'm also happy to stay here if someone has a question, like a personal question, which they don't want to go out into the world. So I will stay behind. Yes, please.
Yes, Ajahn. I always thought that mudita also means sympathetic joy.
Yes,
so
yes.
So, you know, say if someone gets a promotion, rather than being jealous of them, you're...
Yes.
Glad for them.
Yes, that's correct. So you are rejoicing in the goodness in the world. So sometimes it can be a bit difficult with like kind of worldly joys. If we want to go into the really kind of juicy, high Brahmaviharas, then we're looking at something virtuous and something good in the world. And instead of saying, I want that for myself, and there is not enough goodness in the world, we're trying to support the goodness which is in the world already. So if someone is doing a good job and they get a promotion and they're bringing goodness into the world, then we should be rejoicing along with that. But I like to turn it around as well to ourselves and see if there is virtue, if there is a good quality in our mind, why can't we also rejoice with that within ourselves? I feel it's a similar thing, but it's turned around, yeah. But usually the sympathetic joy is kind of towards someone else. That's correct, yeah. Okay, very good. So have a nice weekend. The monks will be disappearing, the nuns as well. We have our rains retreat. So if you wish to come and see us, you have to go a bit further this time for the next 3 months. But it's a very, very nice and peaceful environment. So if you haven't been, or if you need another battery refill, please come. We are there every day, and 10 o'clock is usually a good time to arrive. Okay, yes, we will pay respects to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha before we finish off. That's right.